From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. This week, I've chosen to look at three articles that were published in the last week. One of them looked at guideline-directed therapy in the United Kingdom and the role of the GRACE risk score and survival after non-STEMI. Another very interesting study was published this week looking at dietary intake of dairy and cardiovascular events and mortality. And the last one, a trial looking at the use of aspirin and cardiovascular events and bleeding for the healthy elderly, the ESPRI investigation or trial. So let's start. The first paper was entitled Guideline Indicated Treatments and Diagnostics, GRACE Risk Score and Survival for Non-STEMI. This is really a study looking at the value of guideline-based therapy and non-STEMI in the real world and the value of risk assessment with the GRACE risk score. The authors looked at the Myocardial Ischemia National Audit Project, which prospectively collects information on patients hospitalized with ACS in hospitals in England and Wales. And it's a big study. It's almost 400,000 patients, mean age of 73. Who were diagnosed with a non-STEMI. Obviously, patients who died in the hospital were excluded. And then they looked at the frequency of use of guideline-based treatments, including an EKG, pre-admit aspirin, echo, receipt of an aldo antagonist, coronary angiography, discharge aspirin, a P2Y12 inhibitor, ACE inhibitors, ARBs, beta blockers, and statin, along with smoking cessation and dietary counseling. And they used the GRACE risk score to calculate the estimated risk of death after discharge, as well as in hospital. So overall, 44,000, or about 11.5%, received optimal care. And the number of patients who received the guideline-based therapies, if you look at the total number of therapies achieved, it was about 70%. Interestingly, the most frequently missed opportunity appeared to be the use of an aldo antagonist and then smoking cessation therapy and advice and dietary advice. An echo was not used in about 46%, perhaps because those patients had coronary angiogram and LV gram, perhaps. We've seen this before, and this study showed that the higher the GRACE risk score, the lower the overall number of guideline-based therapies achieved. So across all GRACE risk scores, this was apparent. And longer-term survival was evident in the highest-risk non-STEMI group in patients who received the most guideline-based therapy, particularly. An invasive coronary strategy had the most significant impact on survival across all risk groups, but especially high-risk. So the interpretation of this study, I think, is an interesting question. One way of looking at it is to say, when we treat the elderly with non-STEMI, are we potentially withholding therapies that would have value in terms of risk and maybe overreacting to questions of safety? This might be particularly true with the use of coronary angiography, where study after study has suggested that as we treat the elderly with non-STEMI, we should not necessarily back away from the identification of a culprit lesion and potentially an interventional therapy where appropriate. But it also addresses the question, what was the definition of a non-STEMI? And increasingly, we're recognizing patients who were admitted with a heart failure exacerbation, who had a troponin leak, et cetera. And this is more common, of course, in the elderly. So this is a study where the use of the fourth universal definition of acute MI might have been useful. Since I was one of the godfathers of creating the GRACE risk score, I was pleased to see that the risk score, more than 10 years later, continues to be a very valuable tool in estimating risk. And we should be using this tool in terms of the rigor with which we apply guideline-based treatment. Okay, let's move on and talk about dietary intake and risk for cardiovascular events and mortality. The PURE study, Prospective Urban-Rural Epidemiology Study, was used in this particular analysis. This was published this past week in Lancet. Data on adults from 35 to 79 enrolled in 21 countries across five continents were studied. dietary intake of dairy was looked at in 136,000 patients who were free of cardiovascular disease at baseline. And they looked at country-specific validated food frequency questionnaires. Dairy was milk, yogurt, cheese. They were further grouped into whole-fat and low-fat dairy. And the primary endpoint was a composite of all-cause mortality, cardiovascular mortality, non-fatal MI, stroke, heart failure. And the study went for 15 years from 2003 to 2018. Over 9 years of follow-up, there were about 10,000 events, nearly 7,000 deaths, and about 6,000 major cardiovascular events. Higher intake of total dairy, that is more than two servings a day, was associated, ironically, with a lower risk of the composite endpoint, a hazard ratio of 0.86, also a total mortality, a hazard ratio of 0.83, non-cardiovascular mortality, hazard ratio 0.86, cardiovascular mortality, hazard ratio of 0.77, and major cardiovascular events, hazard ratio 0.78, and also stroke, hazard ratio 0.66. There was no significant association between dairy and myocardial infarction. While cheese intake was not significantly associated with the composite, butter intake in this study was very low, and so probably was outside of the limits of what we could ascertain. So the authors concluded that dairy consumption was associated actually with a lower risk of mortality and major CV events in a diverse multinational cohort. This data was adjusted for things like physical activity, caloric intake, smoking, and other potential confounders. And I think it certainly allows us to conclude that pushing hard on restriction of dairy in patients who are otherwise healthy, at least a study out to almost 10 years, is not a major player in risk. The question of diet continues to be a very interesting topic for research. I think increasingly we're seeing that total calories consumed, certainly very high salt in at-risk patients, those are important things to pay attention to. Certainly in this country, what we see is generally a challenge with caloric intake, overweight, inactive, and associated risks of hypertension, diabetes, hyperlipidemia, and of course, combined risk for cardiovascular events. As we counsel our patients, the potential for a major impact of dairy restriction appears to be a lot less important, perhaps, than some of these other things that we've talked about. So an important study published again in The Lancet. The last study I want to mention this morning is the trial called ASPREE. This was a primary prevention trial looking at aspirin and cardiovascular events and bleeding in the healthy elderly. The investigators enrolled patients from 2010 to 2014, community-dwelling men and women in Australia and the U.S. who were 70 years of age or older, and they did not have cardiovascular disease, dementia, or disability at baseline. They were randomized to 100 milligrams of enteric-coated aspirin or placebo, and the composite endpoint was death, dementia, or persistent physical debility. 19,000 patients enrolled in the trial, about equal numbers, of course, to aspirin and placebo, almost 5 years of follow-up. The rate of cardiovascular events was 10.7 events per 1,000 person years of treatment in aspirin, and 11.3 events per 1,000 person years in placebo. The rate of major hemorrhage was 8.6 events per 1,000 person years on the aspirin side and 6.2 in the group that got placebo. The authors concluded that the use of low-dose aspirin as a primary prevention strategy in older adults resulted in a higher rate of major hemorrhage and did not result in a significantly lower risk of cardiovascular disease than placebo. And when the authors broke this down into individual endpoints of interest, what we saw, I think, was consistent with the overall effect. If you looked at the risk of fatal cardiovascular disease, really no difference. If one looked at the risk of major hemorrhage, as mentioned, there were more events with aspirin. Fatal major hemorrhage was pretty similar, 0.7 per 1,000 patient years with the aspirin group, 0.6 with placebo. I think it's a very important study. You know, the other studies that we've had looking at primary prevention, the Physicians' Health study published many years ago, certainly suggested benefit among physicians taking aspirin over a prolonged period of time. The dose, I believe, was 365 milligrams every other day. The hypertension optimization trial, HOT, that study also suggested that there was a benefit of low-dose aspirin in primary prevention. But recall that that was a study of patients with hypertension. And I think the authors of this trial would tell you that, you know, the overall benefit of primary prevention with aspirin has to be thought about carefully in terms of overall effect, including mortality. The benefit may well be offset by hemorrhagic risk. And so we should choose carefully. Obviously, patients with a prior event, that's secondary prevention. Patients with hypertension, we might conclude from the HOT trial that that's a group we target. And certainly patients with major cardiovascular risk factors who have an estimated pooled risk equation, estimate of a 10-year outcome, 10% or more cardiovascular events, those are patients we might target, particularly avoiding those who have a history of GERD or prior ulcer or certainly a prior bleed. So the ESPRIT study adds to our knowledge base as we think about the use of aspirin and primary prevention. So I've covered three studies today. I hope these were useful to you. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org, and you can find this information on the website. Please also find a new educational catalog. It's under the Meeting and Education tab on ACC.org. Use this tool, and you can sort out your educational offerings by various formats, many of which are free. Find us online or wherever you get your podcasts. And I look forward to talking to you again next week.